Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boost your healthy T levels, burn fat, try M-Drive Boost and Burn. Leaner, more energy. MDriveForMen.com. Walgreens has it. Reggie Bush played for over a decade in the NFL, was obviously a star at USC in college football. We'll get to the Big Ten, going to play October 17th in a few minutes with Reggie, but he joins us, Fox Sports college football analyst with a lot of NFL years as well. So I got to start. It's interesting. So I watched Joe Burrow this weekend, and I thought he was really, really good. You played with one rookie quarterback, Ryan Tannehill.
Yep.
And Ryan's had a nice career. I think Joe Burrow's probably a little more talented, maybe a lot more talented. But when you watched Ryan Tannehill as a rookie, go back and compare it to Burrow, what did you see with Tannehill that you knew he would be able to win games? Like, what were the tell signs?
Well, you could just see how very athletic he was as a quarterback, and you could see that his ability to take off and run with the football was there. The skill sets were there. He could throw the football really well. The way he stood in the pocket, his pocket presence was good, but he just didn't have we didn't give him enough weapons, and he didn't have the experience yet. I think that, you know, you needed to be very successful early on. Obviously, he was coming from a different situation. I think he had only played quarterback the position like for 2 or 3 years before he got drafted. So Joe Burrow is going to be better served in this position because he's a true quarterback. You know, I'm sure he played quarterback probably since he was a little kid.
Yeah.
But then we saw how his career and the spotlight started to emerge for him at LSU, where he was kind of thrust into the starting spot and really took advantage of the opportunity and had arguably one of the greatest college football seasons that we've ever seen, you know, in 1 year from a quarterback.
Everybody says they can handle criticism, but Bruce Arians was kind of rough on Brady. Do you think in the deep recesses of his mind, Tom's thinking, bruh, settle down, it's game one. What do you think Tom's thinking?
I'm sure Tom is thinking exactly what you just said. Like, hold on, man, this is only game one. You know, it's not like they had a normal offseason, right? Everybody is dealing with, you know, these adverse conditions, right? But, you know, we talk about this all the time on our college football show. The teams that have continuity, to have a returning quarterback, returning coach, returning, you know, system, those are going to be the teams that are better served to be successful this year. Tom Brady's coming from New England to Tampa, different environment, different teammates, different circumstances, and then you're asking him to go into New Orleans, the three-time NFC defending champs, and to beat the New Orleans Saints, which is hard for anybody to do. So I'm sure Tom Brady was like, yo, Bruce, like, just chill out for a second, man. Like, just, it's going to get better at some point.
Listen, it's become more of a wide receiver league. And it's become, you know, this game was always pound the football. It's not like that. The quarterbacks move. The rules are different. Wide receivers matter more. OBJ's talented. Mm-hmm. But the grass isn't always greener. You know, he's getting 4 catches a game. In New York, he was getting 6.5, 7 catches a game. And this team's worse than the Giant teams. And have you ever been in a locker room? I'm not being critical of pro athletes. If I was a wide receiver in the NFL, unlike the NBA, I'm probably playing for 7 years. That's my prime. It's small. You can get OBJ's had injuries. Did you ever play with somebody? Because I think OBJ, if this is a bad September, I think OBJ is about done with it in Cleveland. You know, like, he's about done with it because he's a super talent and he's disappearing. I mean, Reggie, he is disappearing in the NFL. Tell me what a player thinks when you're talented, you want to be a team guy, but your career is short, you're a star, and you're not getting touches. What is it like?
It's tough, and it feels like, you know, you got no place to go, or you feel like there could be, you know, no answer, you know, possibly for you, because that's a tough situation to be in, especially for Odell, right? You got your way out of New York Giants, and then you ended up in Cleveland, where it looked like it was going to be a better situation for you. And then you go through one or two coaches, quarterback's not playing the way that you thought he would, and you're not getting those same targets. That's why I agree with your statement. The grass isn't always greener. Somebody else I think about, Le'Veon Bell. The grass was not greener for him. I thought that Le'Veon Bell was in a perfect situation where he was in Pittsburgh. Now, obviously, we wish, you know, he wished that they could have gotten the money right and the contracts right. But to your point, the grass is not always greener. And for Odell and for any other players that are in those situations, you kind of feel like your best years are being wasted.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about that today, even with Saquon Barkley, right? He had 15 carries for 6 yards. And, you know, the talk was, is Saquon Barkley, you know, washed up? Is he overrated? And I don't think he's overrated. I just think that the nature of the beast, he's in a situation where it's out of his control how many times they give him the football. It's out of his control how many times they're going to call his number.
Yeah. So I'm watching all these quarterbacks now. Kyler Murray's fascinating. 5'9", running around guy. And it's really, I was told Joy this, I think it was yesterday. I'm like, man, they're quarterbacks are shapes and sizes now. Some are like Goff. They sit in the pocket. Kyler Murray's running around. Do you worry or think that Kyler Murray running around, like, is that a 12-year quarterback? I mean, when you see him, what do you see?
I see Russell Wilson when I see Kyler Murray. You think about Russell Wilson, he takes off and runs all the time, but he's very shifty and he never takes the big hit. And so if you can be elusive enough, which Kyler Murray is, you see how short he is already, and he's fat, and he's very fast as well. Those kinds of players are some of the hardest players to tackle. You think about Darren Sproles, right? Darren Sproles in space, out in the open, was one of the hardest players, for any defensive player to tackle. And so for Kyler Murray, it's the same thing. As long as he can get down, right, as long as he can protect himself, he will stay healthy. And it's literally that simple. But Russell Wilson, to me, is the pinnacle, right? Because Russell Wilson, year in and year out, he proves himself, as a quarterback. But he also proves himself as a person that you can count on. You can count on him to be there. He's not going to get injured. He's not going to get banged up. And that's the same way I see for Kyler Murray. On the flip side, if you think about RG3, you know, Robert Griffin III,
right,
he took too many hits, right? And we see what happened with his situation. And so it's all about protecting yourself as a quarterback, right? You live to fight another play. And I think, you know, we can even use examples like Cam Newton was a guy who took too many hits as a quarterback.
Yeah, no. I think Big Ben and Cam, because they were so big, Reggie, they kind of feel invincible. And all of a sudden, yeah, you wake up one day and Cam and Big Ben are limping around. It's like you just can't take 260-pound defensive end banging on you. So the Big Ten, according to a story this morning, is going to play. And I'm a big believer in social distancing. I'm a big believer in masks. But I also believe you should have the right to either go to school or go to college. And if you don't want, you shouldn't be penalized. But if you do want, you shouldn't be penalized. I think it is kind of free will. You do, but I do think you should opt out as an athlete. You don't get penalized. You don't lose your scholarship. That's my reaction to today's news. I'm happy for the Big Ten. Where's it land for you?
I'm happy for the Big Ten because, for one, I think going forward, we need uniformity across college football. We cannot have three conferences playing football, and then you got two other conferences that are kind of left out there by themselves trying to figure out a way to best handle and navigate through the coronavirus, which is something none of us have experience in, right? But at the same time, college football, we're all in this together, right? We can't have three of our conferences playing and two other conferences that are trying to figure this thing out. Because there's too many great athletes amongst all these conferences, and they all deserve a shot, right? We just want to make sure we give them a fair and safe shot to play a football season. And so that's why I say we need uniformity, maybe one commissioner, maybe one medical doctor that's speaking, you know, for everybody, instead of having all these differences in opinions. And then you see how things kind of unfolded to where we are right now, you know, praying and hoping that the Big Ten, you know, does take off. And then where are we left with? We're left with now the Pac-12, you know, kind of looking up at everybody else.
Yeah. By the way, I got to circle back to the NFL. So I watched a couple of teams this weekend, and most of the teams that I thought were good were good. Most of the teams I thought were bad were bad. And when you're on a team that's not good, you're trying to convince yourself. I'm watching the Giants last night, and I'm like, this isn't great. This is not great. And I'm watching, you know, I'm watching a couple teams this weekend, and I'm like Cleveland, I'm like Cincinnati, I'm like, this is probably not going to be great. When you're an NFL player, When are you finally realistic? Like what week is it that you go, okay, we're not good?
I would say that's probably about week 5 or 6. You really know, okay, are we 1-5? Are we, 1-4? Are we 3-2? Like, where do we stand? Are we even 2-3? Right. But about week 5 or 6, you really kind of know what kind of season you're in for. And I've been on both sides. I've been on the sides where I was in New Orleans, where, we started off on fire, winning every single game. And I was like, okay, we are going to be nice this year. And then I've been in other situations where I was in Miami, or whether it was Buffalo or even Detroit, where we started off pretty bad and you just knew what kind of season you were in for. I'll never forget when I was in Miami, I actually knew in training camp we weren't going to be that good, because we had fights literally every single day. We had the same players showing up late almost every single day. And then it showed up on the football field. So players definitely know, though. Everybody has that clock in their head when they know, and it's usually about week 5 or 6.
How depressing is that? Reggie knew in preseason it was over. That's depressing. God, that's 4 months of hell. You got beat on for a
training camp.
Oh, God, Lord. Reggie Bush, good seeing you, bud.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Colin.
You bet. Now the Pac-12 is going to be the only conference not playing. And what it bums me out for USC, because USC is the one national power that now won't play. There's about 7 programs that are really national powers, and USC is the one sitting out there going, all right, we'd like to play, we can't. It's like, I said this years ago to somebody. I said, USC should go independent. Just call UCLA, Stanford, Cal. Say, we'll play our California partners. We got your back. We'll take care of you, the UC system, but we're going to go independent. We'll play Notre Dame every year. We'll go play Navy every year, a BYU, and we're going to go independent. Well, what about the swimming team? What about them? I mean, USC football carries the program, carries all the athletic programs. I feel bad for some of these college football powers that pay all the bills for all the programs, and they're told, no, sit in the sidelines. It's like, that's when you start thinking as an athletic director, well, what am I doing here? Why are we playing Oregon State? What's the value for me in this? Why am I playing Washington State? Why am I playing Arizona? Well, what do I get out of this? 35 years, you get something out of it. I don't get anything out of it. That's where, if I ran one of these big schools like Ohio State, if they didn't play this year, if I'm Ohio State, I'm like, that Ohio State's brand, they can go independent. Ohio State can go independent. We're going to cut our sports down to 12, 11 programs. We're going to go independent. We're going to make our own schedule. If BYU can do it, Ohio State can do it. They can fill a stadium anywhere in the country. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, week 1 proved to be costly for some teams that lost some key players to injury. Cowboys tight end Blake Jarwin tore his ACL. He'll be out for the season. Linebacker Leighton Vander Esch is out 6 to 8 weeks with a fractured collarbone, and offensive lineman Cam Irving will miss time with an MCL sprain. Colts running back Marlon Mack is out for the year with a torn Achilles. Le'Veon Bell is expected to miss a couple weeks with a hamstring injury. George Kittle returned to the 49ers Sunday after a little scare, suffering a knee sprain, but he's questionable heading into week 2. And there were quite a few other notable injuries. Tranquil, the Chargers linebacker, is likely out for the year with a broken ankle. Bengals guard Xavier Suafilo is going to miss a couple weeks with an ankle injury. Really big for the Bengals and Joe Burrow. Eagles defensive end Vinnie Curry will miss time with a hamstring injury. And David Njoku from the Browns is on IR with a knee injury. He can return in 3 weeks. So pretty significant amount of injuries around the league for week 1.
So Jamal Adams is gone. C.J. Mosley's hurt. Le'Veon Bell's hurt. Sam Darnold, once again, is a life preserver. That organization is.
It's something. It's pretty remarkable. That was a bad Sunday.
Think about all the help Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson get. My guy Sammy Darnold's out there on a little dinghy in the middle of the ocean, and he doesn't have any rows or any oars. Jeez. This league is so unfair.
Well, I mean, it matters where you go. That's why I don't get excited about the Jets. I mean, are you done?
I'm done.
You know what? You said you're done.
Nope.
You said you're done.
Two teams.
Gambling the Falcons.
Two teams I'm not betting the rest of the year. Atlanta Jets, I'm out. Stop me. Scold me.
I told you.
Punch me in the forehead if I bet them.
I will be the gatekeeper.
I'm not betting the Falcons or the Jets the rest of the year. I am done with them emotionally. I'm done, and it's week 1.
Boulay, how many weeks does this Falcons thing last?
Because
I'm guessing that it goes 2 weeks. This feels a lot like the coffee thing. No. Remember that time you quit coffee?
First of all, I didn't quit coffee. I quit going and buying coffee at overpriced retail.
No, I think you quit.
You said that on a Monday. You bought coffee again on Thursday.
I don't even think it was that long.
I have a caffeine addiction. Don't make fun of people.
Well, really rough start to the NFL season for some teams. So hopefully they'll get some of those guys back. So Tom Brady and Cam Newton switched teams this season, and fans rushed out to get their new jerseys. According to Fanatics, the two topped the list for the most jersey sales heading into week one, with Brady barely beating out his successor in New England.
How's Nick Bosa 5? That's a lot for an edge rusher.
Yeah, I mean, 49ers.
I guess.
Fans pretty strong.
Brady, Cam, Mahomes, Lamar.
The top four do not surprise me.
I'm going to tell you something. I'll make a prediction here.
Okay.
By the way, once again, who's disrespected?
Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Russell Wilson never had an MVP vote. Russell Wilson literally throws a no-hitter. Nick Bosa has sold more jerseys than Russell Wilson. I mean, isn't it at some point the league should be appalled by how they treat Russell Wilson?
I mean, that's fans. That's on fans. They're the ones buying the jerseys.
If you're Nick a fan, Bosa's... you already have a Seahawks number 3 jersey.
Yeah.
All those other players are relatively new or on new teams.
Yeah. So Tom Brady's usually the top of like merchandise sales, but that's not limited to just jerseys. This is specifically jerseys. So it's not surprising to me that Tom Brady and Cam Newton are at the top of the jersey sales.
Didn't you think it was kind of amazing? Like, we always know LeBron has, like Michael Jordan moved the TV ratings. Tiger Woods moved the TV ratings. LeBron moves the TV ratings. Boy, Brady moves the TV ratings too. Like, I always knew he was popular, but he's not polarizing. I didn't think he was polarizing. Brady moved the damn rating this weekend.
Oh, I think Brady's very polarizing.
You think so?
Sure.
What's polarizing about him?
Patriots, Death Star, Belichick, Spygate, Deflategate.
That's not his fault.
6 championships. Yeah, no, they're for sure.
Oh, yeah.
He is definitely polarizing.
Apparently excellence is polarizing.
It is. It is. But he definitely invokes a bit of rage. I no longer am in that camp, but for a long time, yeah.
And you're petty.
I'm very petty.
And you're over it.
Well, I'm just over it because I don't want to be the person, and I'm in this camp with LeBron James as well. I don't want to be the person who didn't enjoy greatness while we had it.
Thank you.
So I've suffered through the pain and the agony
of greatness.
And now I'm just going to experience it and enjoy watching it. I'm not rooting in any other way, but I don't want to be the person that takes that for granted.
All right.
So the Clippers are facing elimination today against the Nuggets after blowing double-digit leads in the last 2 games. Doc Rivers says there's no secret why they've struggled recently. The Nuggets are shooting over 60% in both second halves, making a ton of trips to the free throw line as well. But going into Game 7, he's focusing on getting the Clippers back to basics.
I'm going to say, let's go win. Like, there's no Roro's features are very overrated, Dan. They last about 3 minutes, and you come running out, and you're fired up, and you know, 3 minutes later, you got to focus on playing basketball. So there's no, like, secret speech. You know, that's where, you know, the movies.
Hoosiers.
It's about playing basketball, manning up, moving the ball, doing all the things that we can do.
Heat win game 1, Clippers win game 7. Nice night of basketball for everyone tonight.
You know what? I like Eric Spoelstra. Did I tell you my Eric Spoelstra moment?
No.
So I always thought Eric Spoelstra was underrated. I really like him as a coach. And apparently, so one time I'm in Hawaii with Ann, and so I didn't even see him. So we're walking by, and Ann goes, "There's that handsome coach for LeBron's team." And I'm like, oh, hell, it's...
Anna's always spotting everybody.
Yeah, and I was like...
She's great at that.
How did you know that? So I walked over and I said, I do that. I said, listen, I don't want to bother you. I just want to say hi. I want to acknowledge that my wife... So, and he goes, oh, come over here. He goes, my dad loves listening to you. He goes, I can't. I'm too damn busy. But he goes, my dad says you're saying nice stuff about me all the time. And I was like, well, you're great. And he's really an engaging guy.
Yes, that was great.
But I never thought Spoelstra got the love he deserved because LeBron and Wade and Bosch were so great. The guy can flat out coach. They disassembled Milwaukee's offense. He is a great coach. And
they swept the Pacers.
Like, Popovich is great, but he got credit. And Kerr's great, and he's getting credit. Spoelstra's great, and Brad Stevens gets credit. Spoelstra's the last coach in the league that we have to acknowledge. dude can flat coach.
Well, part of Spoelstra not getting credit, I think, is Pat Riley. Riley
that's
is
right.
just this presence
that's
that,
right.
you know, looms over the organization, as he should. He's the godfather. But that's that plays a role in
that's,
it.
That's and not spying on people in Hawaii bars, but it was a nice moment for us, Spoelstra and I connected.
That's a good story.
And he was just married at the time, I think.
He'd yeah,
just
they gotten, have, a, I think, two kids now.
Yeah, no, they've just gotten married.
Yeah.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Yeah, same thing with Russell Wilson. Pete Carroll's a legend, Marshawn Lynch, Legion of Doom, and the great player in the middle, nobody gives him credit for. And it's like, that's kind of Spoelstra. I got Riley up there, I got Wade, I got LeBron. Everybody's like, no. This guy, he's coach of the year. Now, again, why don't we wait till the playoffs are over to give these stupid awards out?
Because it's a regular season award.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. The NBA doesn't matter in the regular season. Seeding doesn't even matter.
I'm saying that's why they do it, because it's supposed to be a regular season award.
Does any sport get this right? Does any sport vote on the awards after the whole thing's wrapped up? Does anybody do this right? The only reason we watch sports is for the big games.
You have like the finals MVP and the Super Bowl MVP. So there's an additional honor for the highest level of competition.
But I just, and then by the way, then they announce it like a month after the season.
Yeah, I mean, they should announce it earlier. That's for sure.
You know what? There should be just one guy in America that is just the commissioner of all sports. I nominate myself.
You're just going to make all the rules.
Just let's get this crap figured out. There's just a lot of nonsense going on.
You do have good ideas.
Yeah. All right, coming up next, what do we got? Oh, it's my quarterback head coach debut report cards.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Week one officially in the books, and it's time for report cards. Now, Goulet gives me crap because he said I'm a very lenient teacher in the books. I don't like to be a buzzkill week one. I want my students to feel good about themselves.
You're the teacher everyone tries to get because it's an easy grade.
Well, you're the teacher nobody wants to have because you don't have good hygiene. Okay, I'd rather be me.
Says the guy who quit shaving this week.
Okay, let's go, Joy. Let's go with our report card.
All right, Professor Colin, what grade are you giving Tom Brady?
B-. He's getting into a bad habit of pick sixes. Now, Mike Evans was recovering from a hamstring injury. Leonard Fournette is not fully ready to go. They're going to look really good this week against Carolina's defense. But he is getting into – he's thrown a pick six in three consecutive games. So it is – listen, we just got rid of that guy. It's called Jameis Winston. So, like, let's get out of that space. I thought this was a really, really bad throw. That's a bad throw.
B-. Being very kind week one.
All right.
What grade are you giving Teddy Bridgewater?
I feel harsh, B-. The Raiders' defense is awful. You're at home. You got to win that football game. You got really good weapons. You got to win that football. Now, he did hit Robbie Anderson for Teddy Bridgewater's longest touchdown pass since his rookie year. But to me, you're at home. You got Christian McCaffrey. You know, here's another thing. And I'm a Teddy Bridgewater supporter.
You are.
You got to call a timeout and tell Matt Rhule, we're not running that stupid fullback dive. I would just say, no, we're not doing it. You've been in this league long enough. That's a rookie head coach. You just say, we're not running that play. I got Christian McCaffrey. I'm not giving it to some guy who may not be on the squad in 8 weeks.
What grade are you giving Joe Burrow?
B+. I thought he looked good. So he throws a terrible interception.
Mm-hmm.
Following drive immediately after that, 8 of 11, 70 yards, 7 rush yards. His best drive of the day was after his biggest mistake. That shows maturity, resilience, toughness. I thought Joe Burrow looked really, really good. And he's a little bigger. It's like he looks about 10, 12 pounds of just weight room stuff. He looked big and capable.
Professor Colin, what grade are you giving Joe Judge?
Giants coach D, a lot of bad. First of all, they couldn't run the football at all. 29 rushing yards. Fewest of any team week one. They also committed a delay of game and a 4th-and-1. First drive of the game. First drive of the game. You've got to delay a game. You can't have 12 plays scripted. I mean, come on now. The Jets and the Giants did not look well coached early on.
What grade does Mike McCarthy get this week?
They weren't terrible. C-. I would say this, 3 points on 6 drives in the second half. Great coaches are good after intermission. They also went for it in a 4th-and-3 late in the game. They could have tied it up. That's kind of situational football. I do like coaches that go for it. But I'm going to be pretty hard on coaches. One of the things I like about Pete Carroll, his teams are very good in the second half. Belichick's team, very good in the second half. Come on, you can't have Dak and Zeke and that O-line and Amari and CeeDee Lamb and Mike Gallup and give me 3 points. Dak is better than 3 points against that defense.
What grade are you giving Cam Newton?
A-. I mean, I didn't ask a ton of him through the air, but I thought to walk in. Folks, he just got there. 15-19, led the Patriots in rushing. This was one of my concerns. This is not an easy offense. This is a complex offense with a lot of variables, a lot of looks, a lot of sets, a lot of movement. He figured it out quick. I'm not sure. By the way, that Jarrett Stidham is the next blobbity blobbity. That thing's over, right?
Oh, my God.
God, what Jarrett Stidham is.
I forgot about that, actually.
Well, what happened to that thing?
Anyway.
That was the dumbest story of the half offseason.
What grade for Matt Rhule?
C-. Lucky I don't flunk him out of the class. That play call, have the ball, minute 26, at home. You hand off to a fullback and 4th-and-1 with Christian McCaffrey. That is, by the way, you do realize here, this is a home game for a West Coast team early start time.
Yeah.
You got to go for it. First of all, when you're a rookie coach, it's your first game. You got some leeway. If you go for it and you try to throw them, you know, you do something clever and you don't get it, people are going to say, well, Matt Rhule's a college guy. He's clever. He's out of the box. That looks like 1974 NFL football. Matt Rhule, that's not who you are. They didn't hire you to do that. I can hire a John Fox to do that.
What grade are you giving Ron Rivera?
Highest of the weekend, A+. Guy got an IV at halftime. 17-point deficit. A 14 quarterback hits on Carson Wentz. He's always been a good defensive coach. But you know what? That's as impressive a thing as the Washington football team has done after a chaotic offseason of nonsense. I mean, stuff inside the organization. You got Dwayne Haskins, who played a very good second half. That is an A+ coaching job by Ron, an easy guy to root for.
What grade are you giving Phillip Rivers?
Let's slow down on the Phillip Rivers hate. C. They asked him, Joy, to throw 46 times.
Yeah, that's a lot.
He threw 363 passes, or 363 yards. Now, that would have been something. He also lost Marlon Mack, so they didn't have any running game. You cannot ask a quarterback to throw 40, 45 times and then chew him out because he throws a pick. That you don't even want Mahomes throwing that many times. That's ridiculous, so I give him a C.
Finally, Professor Colin, what grade are you giving Kevin Stefanski?
D. I don't want to hear about no preseason. Okay, first quarters mean a lot. Joe Judge had a bad first quarter. Adam Gase had a bad first quarter. Kevin Stefanski had a bad first quarter. I don't expect Cleveland to beat Baltimore. But you got to come out in your first 12 plays offensively, move the ball, and look organized, and not have penalties and turnovers. Not good. I got to tell you, I'm not into firing coaches, and he's safe. But I'm dead serious on this. Adam Gase, look at their schedule. They're 1-5. I'm not sure it's not time to make the move. He can't get along with anybody.
I don't love firing coaches midseason, but I don't.
Greg Williams, not a bad interim.
That's a consistent disaster. That's true, though.
Boost your healthy testosterone, burn fat, try M-Drive Boost and Burn Lean Muscle. What a good Tuesday. See you tomorrow live in L.A. For joining everybody, The Herd.